And I'd like now like to introduce our speaker, Professor Harry Glasbeck. Professor Glasbeck is a professor emeritus and senior scholar of Osgoode Law, Osgoode Hall Law School of York University in Toronto. He's been a barrister and solicitor at the Supreme Court of Victoria in Australia, and he's taught corporate law, corporate social responsibility, and corporate criminality in Australia and Canada. He's published well over 100 articles and papers on these and related subjects, and he's written 10 books. He will be speaking today about his latest book, Wealth by Stealth, Corporate Crime, Corporate Law, and the Perversion of Democracy. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Professor Harry Glasbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Page. Thank you for welcoming me. I'm pleased to be here. I'm very admiring of the fact that there is an organization like this which keeps going and going and going. That's rare, let me tell you. That's a rare thing, and you are to be commended. And it's very heartwarming to know people are interested in public affairs. And that's why I wrote this book about which I'm to speak for 20 minutes or 25 minutes. And trust me, that really depresses me that I only get 25 minutes. Right? It took a damn 3 years to write a book. Right? But it was the notion that I wanted to intervene in public affairs, which in my view has not got the right kind of discourse, not the right kind of action that it ought to have. And of course, my way of intervening in any kind of discussion has to be with my long suit, which is law. That's what I did. And for those of you who may be interested or not, before I began law, I used to be tall and blonde. Now, the book is an intervention, because my intervention as a lawyer is to say that what I've found to be disturbing is the corporation. As an institution, I don't think people take the corporation as such, as a thing, seriously enough. What I mean by that is something like this. We often speak, if we hate the corporation, as I do, we say things like, oh, a corporate agenda. If we don't like their style, we say, oh, it's very corporate. If we think about them as good or bad, we might say something like, oh, this is a good or bad corporate culture. Or we talk about corporate citizenship, and so on and so forth. And having said that, we think we've actually described something. We've actually said something. What I'm interested in is the very legal design of the corporation, the architecture of the corporation. Can't be heard?
No, that's
not. Oh, no. Because I actually don't need it.
I need it for the feed.
I know. It's the design, the architecture of the corporation which troubles me. We accept a corporation today as completely legitimate, as part of our normal life, as our principal way of generating wealth and welfare in our society. And that's what we do, and therefore it's in the air, it's everywhere, and we don't think about it any more than that. There is no other way of producing the kind of life we seem to want. That's the way we approach the corporation. Now, that is very strange. The corporation, in order to come to this point, had to defeat a tremendous, but like a tremendous amount of distrust. Great thinkers and political nobles fought against the idea of the corporation. With all the political might, they fought it. And I hate quoting, but I'll do it because I've got only such a little limited time, and this guy says it better than I do. He did it in one paragraph, I wrote 300 pages. The guy I'm talking about is a man called Louis Brandeis, who was a very famous judge in the United States. And he wrote as follows. The prevalence of the corporation has led men of this generation to act as if the privilege of doing business in a corporate form was in the interest of the citizenry, and has led the citizens to accept the evils attendant upon us here and about the unrestricted use of the corporate mechanism, as if these evils were the inescapable price of civilized life, and hence to be borne with resignation. That's what I want to stop. I don't want you to be resigned to your fate. Don't be. Throughout the greater part of our history, Brandeis wrote, a different view prevailed. Although the value of this instrumentality in commerce and industry was fully recognized, that is, it's useful, incorporation for business was commonly denied long after it had been fully granted for religious, educational, and charitable purposes. It was denied because of fear. Fear of encroachment upon the liberties and opportunities of the individual. Fear of the subjugation of labor to capital. Fear of monopoly. Fear that the absorption of capital by corporations in their perpetual life might bring evil similar to those which attended mort men. There was a sense of some insidious menace inherent in large aggregations of capital, particularly when held by corporations. And now we think they're normal. What happened? I think we should have that fear restored. And from fear comes political thinking and then action. Why should we be afraid of them? Well, first of all, they do produce a great deal of wealth. They also reduce that wealth by committing an enormous number of harmful things. Just harmful. Like killing thousands, sometimes millions of people by recklessly disregarding their needs. That's what happened in, say, asbestos processor. The count now is that 5 to 7 million people will die in the next 50 years worldwide because of exposure to asbestos. People made profit through asbestos corporations setting up the premature and very painful death of 5 to 7 million people. That should be counted when we count wealth, somehow or another. Or Nestle is going around the world selling infant formula where it has to be mixed with impure water and babies die. Or Ford making a car with a gas tank too far back so it explodes on touch, knowing so and refusing to replace it because they rather pay damages than repair the cars. And so I've got thousands of these. Exxon poop was dropping dirty water in the Hudson River, so dirty garbage in the river, and taking pure water on board so it can take it to its refineries in Aruba. Hoffman LaRoche entering into conspiracies to fix vitamin prices to the tune of $4 billion. And so on and so forth. These are horrible acts. But these horrible acts are not what I'm angry about. These horrible acts are the outcome, are the face, the ugly face, or as I like to think of it, the feces of the real impact of the corporation. And this is that the corporation is so structured so as to undermine and attack the values by which we claim, not me by the way, we as a society claim to live. The values of a liberal political regime, that is in political terms, the liberal system, and in economic terms, the market system. Both these sets of values are distorted by the way that the corporation is structured. There are people who claim that they believe in liberal political values and market economy, hiding behind these corporations, taking advantage of the distortion and destruction of those values. That's what the book is about. Now, if you want all of it, I need another hour. Having given you my thought and conclusion, just a little bit about the way I approach the argument, and later on I believe you get a chance to talk with me and at me and yell at me, and I'll give you, try to document some of the things that I'm now just sketching out for you. Notice the example in the book that I used very early on because of my kid. My kid had an invisible friend. She was called Kim. Right? And she had tea parties with her invisible friend, and mom and dad would sit down and have tea with Kim and our daughter, who was called Denise. And we'd all sit there and we'd all pass the cookies to Kim and so on, you all know that phenomenon, right? You probably all still have invisible friends. Now, my daughter had an invisible friend because she was an unpleasant child, and she needed one. And then, of course, the kid would break a teacup or something like that. And not being a very tolerant man, remember, I was tall, blonde, and strong, I would go up there and whack! Say, "Hey, be more careful next time, will you?" And the kid would say, "Oh, I didn't do it. Kim did it." And I would say, "No, no, no. We can pretend that Kim exists for a tea party, but not when it comes to responsibility." Lord Thompson of Fleet has an invisible friend. Izzy Asper has an invisible friend. And so on. That friend is a corporation. Right? Nothing that is done by Ken West is attributable to Izzy Asper or his son, whatever his name is. I'm too old to know. Nothing! See, that's interesting, isn't it? And it works like it. And I'll be very quick now. You're going to hear a bit of law, very painful. How do we create corporations? A few rich people come together to do their business in corporate form. They don't have to. They could form a joint venture, a cooperative, a partnership, do it by themselves. And they do all of those things as well. Right? I mean, there are many ways of doing business. But when they decide to form a corporation, when they do decide it, and especially I'm talking about large corporations at the moment. We can talk about small corporations later if you like. But when they form a large corporation, it's basically just rich people. Just very wealthy people. The numbers are something like this. 1% of all Canadians own roughly 20% of all the wealth in this country. The top 10% own roughly 54% of all the wealth. The bottom 40% share roughly 1-2% of the wealth. The bottom 20% have negative wealth. Now, you can see immediately that the bottom 40% are not very active on the front of forming corporations. Right? They don't have much disposable income. That takes care of 13 million Canadians not participating. Right. So then, the top 10% can, maybe even the top 20% can do so. That is, they can take some of the wealth they don't need and put it into a firm to make more wealth, because more is better. Right? That's the key. More is better. Right? So they want more. They've already got all of it. You notice that? 10% share 54% of the wealth. With this report, they've already got most of it. They want more. They want more. Not enough. Just not enough. So they want more. So they come together. The middle 50%, remember there was 10%, 54, 40%, about 1 or 2. The middle 50 have about 45, 46, 44%, depending on how the numbers are. That sounds almost reasonable. That's probably most of us in this room. But of course, most of that is equity in your house and in your pension. It's not disposable wealth. When you invested in the market, that is, into forming corporations and supporting corporations, you do so not to make more wealth. You do it to secure your existing standard of living, which is a completely different approach. So you get all these rich people come together, and they form a corporation, and they go to a registrar, a flunky, in a suit. And they say, I want to form a corporation. And the registrar says, are you qualified? No, he doesn't say that. You're qualified because you're rich. No qualifications required. None. And so you sign up, fill in a form, another flunky gives you that. And you get to sign up the form, and you have formed the corporation. The only thing you have to have is a name that nobody else is using. That's all. You have to have no purpose whatsoever for doing so. None. You don't have to put in a particular amount of capital. You don't have to give any undertaking of any kind. And there it is. You form the corporation. That moment. That very moment. That moment. You have formed a person. An individual. Like you and I. With all the rights, powers, and capacities of you and I. Magic. Having formed that corporation as a person, as an individual person, it instantly is mature. None of this copulation, dating, gestation, and sort of childhood, and hormonal teenagerism, straight to maturity, owning property, and capable of creating another corporation, and another, and another. Because it's a person like you and I. It can do so. When Enron went bust, it had 3,500 subsidiaries and affiliates. Grandchildren, children, nephews, nieces. Right? All that. All that. That's why it's hard to follow what they did. Right? It takes a while. So, they formed the corporation. Sovereign, autonomous individual, which owns property, and therefore has the same standing as you and I to make liberal political claims. See what the magic this is? A thing that was created for commercial activity only, it gets political rights. It's amazing. We had to fight something like several thousand years to get where we are with our political rights. Nobody gave them to us. It gets them. Out of nowhere. So it can ask for freedom of speech. That's what the tobacco companies are doing when it says, you can't stop us from advertising to little children. It's our freedom of speech. R.J. Reynolds must have freedom of speech. Kidding me. Why? Is it the law? Freedom of association. They claim that. Freedom of religion. They claim that. Because it makes sense. I don't always get it, by the way, because there are obviously bad arguments to be made. But they can claim them. They start off with the legitimacy of being a political person. So they get legitimacy from that. And of course, because they're individuals, they're ideally suited, to be members of our economic market system. Our economic market system, as if you didn't know, is all about the Adam Smith notion. We don't do it like that, of course, but that's what we pretend in our heads. We pretend that we believe in a market, that if each of us as a sovereign, autonomous individual maximizes our talents, our resources, do with them as we wish, optimize them, then we'll exchange them for whatever goods or services all you others are doing with exactly the same intent. And if none of us can coerce anyone else into making any particular thing, into buying anything, into setting any price, then obviously we're making all our choices. What we want to make, what we want to buy with us. So it's two things. It's efficient uses of all our talents and resources, spontaneously generated by our abilities and our desires. On the one hand, that's efficient, because if we all do it, because it works this way by competition, right? I make glasses with my talents and resources, and I make money. Well, sure enough, well, The only person I know in the room is Ian McKenna. Ian McKenna makes glasses because he says Glasbeck makes glasses, but I can make them better looking and cheaper. So people are going to buy McKenna's. So I have to drive myself to make better, more beautiful glasses and so on. Till eventually, everybody gets glasses that they want at the price they want. That's sufficient. Yeah, because when we stop wanting glasses, we use those resources for something else. Doing the same thing over and over and over again. Wonderful system. In an ideal system, it's good. But you need an individual sovereign who cannot coerce anyone else, who cannot set prices. And in corporation is an individual, by legal definition, and is therefore allowed to participate in this game. What's wrong with all of that? Now, how many minutes have I got? What's wrong with all of that is that the corporation is not an individual, it's a collective, functionally. That's what makes it work so well. It's all these capitals coming together, with all these people coming together, all being put under one umbrella. It's a functional collective. So the whole thing's a lie. It's actually it's capable of coercing. Ask yourself, can Walmart dictate prices to its trade suppliers? Right? I mean, it's so obvious that you think that even lawyers would see that. Right? I mean, it's potentially coercive politically because it's withholding of capital, which we all might want to do if we don't like our government, becomes much more fearful because there's so much of it. Because they put all these little gobs together to make one big gob. And they're big. You have no idea how they're big. 52 of the largest economies in the world are corporations. So then, coercive. Secondly, what does the investor get? He gets a piece of paper which entitles him to vote for a director because a corporation, we can call it a person we like, can't do anything. The corporation must have somebody deploy the asset. So you get a board of directors which hires a bunch of executives who then hire some workers to do the work. Right? That's the way it works. And so the board of directors is appointed and they plan and they suggest and they think and they invest that big gob of money that's been put together. They respond. But of course they're voted for by the people who gave the money in the first place. They've got a little piece of paper which tells them they can do so. And that they're entitled to a stream of income that these directors yield for them with that big gob of money. They're called shareholders. They hold a share. They also, now, it's a bit of a deal they're getting, watch this, they also get limited liability. That is, once they have invested their money, they will never be held financially responsible. Never! Financially responsible for any cost and debt incurred by the corporation in search of profits to increase the value of that piece of paper. None of you as individuals have that benefit. If you set up a business, your business fails, you have no choice, your assets can't pay off the debt, your boat goes, your house goes, your car goes, your bike goes, and they'll garnish you your wages if you ever get another job. Because you, as a liberal political activist, as a sovereign, autonomous market activist, are allowed to do as you like, provided you take responsibility for your acts. Not them! I've invested, that's enough. I'm a fool now. I've lost my money, that's enough. My money, no, and nobody else's. That's bad enough, right? Worse, gets worse. Much worse, I've got many, but I've got only 1 minute. I'll give you another one that's really bad. They can trade those pieces of paper, by the way. I'll take 2 minutes, damn it. And they can trade those pieces of paper, you know that, right? You hold a shit piece of paper and you say, oh, it's worth $2 at the moment. I think it's going down to 170. There's a guy over there, things are going to be worth 225. That's what the share market is, by the way. It's a bunch of people pretending that they can understand the future on the basis of rumors. Right?
It's really very silly. But I mean, and I'm involved, of course, because I'm an old man and my pension fund is into these things and God knows what they're doing in my name. Now, you can sell it to the other guy. That means that when something hits the fan, the person who was there when it was happening may no longer be there. They keep changing over. Watch what I just said. Very important to you for social understandings. Shareholders have no personal relationship to each other. Unlike you people. None! It's an impersonal set of relationships. The corporation doesn't care who the shareholders are, and they don't care who the others are. The only relation is through money. More. This is it. Because I must stop. But it could be interesting, couldn't it? If we had time. When the corporation has done something terrible, like for instance, they put out, a firm called A.H. Roberts in the United States, put out a contraceptive, intrauterine device called Dalton Shield. You may have heard of it some years ago. And they knew at all times that the wick which was attached to this device had some bacterial infection problems which would lead to miscarriages and possibly death. And they kept on selling it. And of course thousands of people did have miscarriage and death. And eventually they sued and the firm went bankrupt and they got some monies. But that's all they got. No one got punished. Now why not? Why not? Because when it comes to punishment, you go to the people who've been benefiting from this wrongful doing, right? These shareholders, their value's been going up, selling Dalkin Shields everywhere. I've got money, shares go up to 225, 230, 275, go wild. They don't care about people having miscarriages. You might want to go to them and say, hey, you guys, you're responsible for this. This was done on your behalf. But no, because you know what they say, these risk takers. Have you noticed something else I've said? The entrepreneurial class in corporations is the least risk-taking sector of our society. These risk-takers, when it comes to shove and push, say, oh no, we didn't do it, the corporation did it, the invisible friend did it. Not me, and unlike my kid, they get away with it. Because it's no longer their property, they have total legal immunity. That's the state of public affairs I don't like. I'll stop here. There is much more.